When I was 15, my great-grandpa died. And as part of his burial process, there was a viewing of the body. I remember walking into a small room with an open casket on the far wall, and there he was, just lying there. He was in a nice suit, but his face looked off. They had done a good job with makeup and trying to make him look peaceful, but he lacked any kind of animation. There was no spark. And I didn't like to look at his face. It made me uncomfortable. And then he was buried in the mausoleum. And I remember walking in, and there was just this overwhelming smell of flowers. They were cloying, and they seemed almost artificial. And at 15, I was also convinced that I could even smell a hint of death in the air, of air that is not quite fresh, that there was a natural process of decay going on. And I wanted to be anywhere else. I didn't want to smell what I was smelling. I didn't want to see what I was seeing. Judaism places a great emphasis on properly caring for one's dead. After you die, bodies were washed and anointed with oil. Nard was the most common, but myrrh and aloes were also used. And the body was wrapped in layers and layers of cloth. And at that point, friends and family would come over and pay their respects to their and say goodbye to their loved one. And then those same family and friends would carry that body to the grave. It was another sign of respect. And then, often in 8 hours or less after the person had died, they were buried. Now, compared to most of us today, people were far more connected to the death and burial process. And during that time, the smell of perfume, that smell of nard, would have filled the air anywhere that that body went. Now, scent is a powerful thing. Scientists think that more than any other of our senses, smell is the one that has the most impact on our memories. Now, I'm sure you've all had a scent memory before, like baking bread or perfume worn by a relative, the smell of fresh rain on dry ground. The very act of smelling something familiar can trigger our memories and flood into our awareness. Sometimes, whether we like it or not. And the same portion of the brain, which is so tied to smell and to memory, is also connected with our deepest and most primal emotions. In our gospel story for today, we hear that the house was filled with the fragrance of perfume. Jesus and his disciples have all gathered with Mary and Martha and Lazarus for a celebratory dinner. Just a few verses ago in the text, Jesus had raised Lazarus from the dead. Lazarus may even still have smelled faintly of the perfumes that were used to anoint his body for burial. And then Mary comes out with a pound of nard, which comes from the spikenard plant. And the descriptions of the scent range quite dramatically. Some say that it smells like lavender. Others that it smells kind of musky. While others insist that it smells like dirty feet. Regardless of what it smelled like, it was pungent. And Mary brought out this large quantity of perfume used to anoint bodies for burial and gave it to Jesus. Then she anoints Jesus' feet and wipes them with her hair, and the scent filled the room. Mary knows. Mary knows that Jesus is truly the Messiah. She is grateful that he brought her brother back from the dead. And she also knows that Jesus is a person that she cherishes, who is going to die, and soon. Gratefulness and grief, both at the same time. As the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume, no doubt the disciples' brains would be lighting up with memories of their own loved ones who had died, about witnessing the events and participating in them and smelling this very distinct smell. They would be triggered into associating that moment at the dinner table with death and with burial. When their minds might snap back to the present, though, they would see their Messiah, who was to conquer the powers that oppressed. He was supposed to come to vanquish his enemies, not to be killed by them. And at least for a split second, I have no doubt that every single one of them probably looked at what Mary was doing, thinking that she was way out of line. She was confused. But Mary's actions tell us that Jesus is a different kind of Messiah. He's the anointed one, which is what Messiah means. And Mary had just anointed him herself. But at the same time, Jesus is also one who will soon die. Mary's the only one that sees this. She's the only one who actually gets it. She performs the anointing, which was the role of a priest, and she tells the world something they didn't want to hear, namely that Jesus was going to die, which was the job of a prophet. Mary is a priest and a prophet. Even more, Jesus is connected to Mary's intimate gesture. Mary doesn't beat around the bush. She goes directly for caring for her beloved Jesus in the most appropriate way she knows. Now, some gospel accounts have a similar scene where a woman anoints Jesus' head with expensive perfume. But John, here, chooses to tell us that she anoints Jesus' feet. In the very next chapter, we're going to hear about Jesus washing his disciples' feet, telling them that now they are to go out and wash the feet of others. It's a sign of discipleship in Jesus. And Mary does it first. Or maybe even Mary inspired Jesus' washing of feet as a sign of discipleship. And we only hear about Judas' objection here. And he tries to turn the attention from Mary's gift to Jesus and the message that they all need to hear, to calling the action into question, to placing doubt on her motives. He tries to reject her gift by saying that it should have gone to the poor. Perhaps it's guilt or selfishness. But Judas is unable to look directly at what is happening right in front of him. He looks away. And then Jesus rebukes Judas. He says, "Leave her alone. She bought it so that she might keep it for the day of my burial." And Jesus has been given this tremendous gift by someone who loves him. He's not about to say no and turn away from such a sincere sentiment. And he looks at Mary, and Mary looks at him. And generosity begets generosity. Mary is thankful for all that Jesus has and will do. Caring for others, including the poor and needy, is how Jesus wants his disciples to be known. So when Jesus walks up to the cross to lay down his life for his friends, it's our turn to be thankful. Mary is our exemplar, anointing Jesus' feet with expensive perfume. That was her act of generosity and thankfulness. What will your thankful generosity look like?